I'm interested in Arizona to see how things
are tightening. If Joe Biden's at 253, if he holds on to Arizona and he gets Nevada, that's 270.
Joe Biden now leads in Pennsylvania statewide by 5,000.
These the president is not going to be able to take over
by a very heavy margin.
The Fox News Decision Desk is calling Arizona for Joe Biden.
We can now project the winner of the presidential race.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country.
John Eastman who?
Why is anyone talking to John Eastman?
Attorney John Eastman. Video from Fox News shows FBI agents seizing his cell phone.
I'm very sympathetic to him legally. I don't know him personally, and politically we're on completely different sides.
I do think you should be disbarred if you've lied about something or you've represented something that you know is not true.
He asked me to help design a strategy. One could not have predicted that would subject me to years of lawfare, but I thought it was important to do to take on that representation.
Was it worth it?
Breaking news right now. Federal investigators obtained a warrant to search the phone of former lawyer for President Trump, John Eastman.
The very reason we have the Fourth Amendment is to prevent that kind of abuse. And yet that's what they're doing here.
Professor Eastman was targeted in ways the likes of which we've never seen before.
This is an example of lawfare, using the law against one's political enemies.
Distorting laws that have been on the books for a long time to find people we don't like because they're saying things that we don't like, and then to use those criminal laws to go after them. That's lawfare on steroids.
I'm just terrified. That's what the communist country do in China, like China. They go after the lawyers.
Oh, he should be disbarred. If he advised Trump, he may need to go to jail.
I think John Eastman deserved to be disbarred.
That's just left-wing McCarthyism.
The head of CISA says at one point, this is the most secure election in our nation's history. And I can't believe he could say that with a straight face. It's laughably false.
Jim, you won't believe it. I just heard that a van dropped off boxes of ballots in the middle of the night.
Wisconsin was lost by 20,000 votes. Georgia was 10,000 votes. Those are very small numbers.
Do you still think the election was stolen?
Absolutely. If we're going to function as a society that the founders bequeathed to us, I don't think we can function without freedom of speech. The ability to question the government when they go astray is critical to the notion that the government works for us rather than the other way around.
Well, that's one of the nation's heroes. He's a current hero. That is for sure. That's John Eastman. And that's the trailer for his movie, The Eastman Dilemma. We've talked about that before. We've talked to John a number of times. He's always just a treasure trove of information and wisdom. And so today we're going to talk to him again because the Supreme Court just made a ton of decisions in the spring, especially about that lower courts filing these injunctions to stop President Trump's executive orders. So we're going to talk about all of that, and we're going to just catch up with him. He still has lawsuits pending in Arizona and Georgia, and also his law licenses have been suspended in California and also in the District of Columbia. It's a mess. But you know what? In spite of the mess, he has a lot of good news, and so I know you're going to enjoy this. But first, well, when you think about the 4th of July, I think about the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, many of us had to memorize. It's that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, unquestioning, in other words, just they're just part of the product, they're in the DNA, and that is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Doesn't end there, but we're going to end there because the point is that there are vast numbers of Americans who have not had a chance for life because their mothers have decided to terminate their lives, either in utero or with the abortion pill, whatever they're doing. And so even if for no other reason, that shouldn't happen in America because we've promised everyone the right to life, and that includes our babies. So on this July, the celebrating the birth of our nation, we remember that, and we want to do everything we can to change it. Preborn is certainly doing that, and that's by showing moms the photos of their baby in utero, where they can see them sucking their thumb or moving around. It's just beautiful, and that's what happens, and it changes moms' minds. Most of them actually do change their mind when they see that. One ultrasound is $28, and we just hope and pray that you'll be generous and give your best amount to help stop taking the lives of unborn babies in this country. We need to do it right now. So lots of things, good things are happening. Let's add this to the list. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you can call us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave a message, some response, some thing of observation, something you didn't like, something you did like. We love hearing from you. So call 662-821-2040 and don't leave us a message about what you think about what you're hearing. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any of the social media platforms. And you can also find us at my website, which is sandyrios.com. I think that it's easier to listen to the podcast doing that. If you're not used to podcasting, sandyrios.com. However, if you're an AFR listener, you probably have already discovered, I hope, that you can go to afr.net, and listen to the program, or you can go to any social media platform, Apple or Spotify or Amazon or any of those, and listen to Sandy Rios 24/7 anytime. Well, you can listen to it, by the way, 24/7. Wasn't that clever? Anyway, so there are lots of ways to listen, and I encourage you to do that. All right, well, John Eastman is always really interesting to listen to, and you're going to learn a lot about the 2020 election, the 2022 election, about potential help for people that are in trouble, potential help for John Eastman himself, and just the progress that we're making on the truth about that election of 2020 and 2022, because it's important. Finally, people are understanding that they've relied to about COVID and the vaccines. They're finally getting that. Well, now we have to make sure that they have a wash of truth about what happened in that election. And I think we're going to get that. We'll talk about that in this conversation today on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
One of my colleagues said, it's called Trump law. If it involves Trump, there ain't no law.
John Eastman is the founding director of the Claremont Institute's Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. He is also a former law professor and served as a law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. His life took a sharp turn when he helped President Trump challenge the integrity of the 2020 election results.
His memos have been likened to a roadmap for a coup.
John Eastman was booked and released from the Fulton County Jail in Georgia.
CNN has identified Eastman as one of six unnamed co-conspirators.
And he's on the path to disbarment.
If in fact what I believe occurred did occur, and people that did it are not held accountable, they'll do it again. You think about the last line in our national anthem. The question is not so much whether the flag still waves or flies. The question is, it still the land of the free and the home of the brave, or is it the land of the coward and the home of the slave?
Well, Sandy Rios with you, and you might recognize that voice because he's been our guest a number of times, because he's a good friend and he's a hero to this country. That was an excerpt with John Eastman, being interviewed by Yanya Keliak, who has, you know, is a good friend too. He hosts a show called Discover American Thought Leaders and does in-depth discussions with people of note who are thought leaders. And that was an interview John did with him just very recently. And, of course, John Eastman, Maybe I didn't know about this new title, but he is a partner with the Constitutional Council Group based in Long Beach, California. He's part of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States of California, but temporarily inactive. We've discussed that, and we'll discuss it today. And D.C., where it is temporarily inactive. He also, of course, clerked for Justice Clarence Thomas. He was the director of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence at Chapman University, and a number of other things. John is just he's a really, really brilliant attorney on constitutional law, and he joins us this morning. John, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks to you, Sandy, and we're just past the anniversary of our nation's birth, so I hope everybody had a wonderful 4th of July weekend. My heart and prayers go out to the folks down in Kerr, Texas, mm-hmm. for the devastating flood and loss of life down there. The loved ones must be just reeling, and my heart goes out to them and our prayers.
You know, John, what's so twisted about that is I'm sure you've seen, I won't play it, but it's a report from CNN about how that's Trump's fault. I'm sure you have heard this. It's Trump's fault because of DOGE, cutting out, you know, certain members of staff. It's the thing that strikes me kind of like your situation, where it's unserious and cruel to twist these things and destroy people's lives over something that should be dealt with in the right way.
Well, especially since, you know, the DOGE cuts did not affect the number of people that were on site. In fact, there were more people than were allotted on site. The warnings were issued. Everything worked as it was supposed to. This was an unprecedented level of flooding that they hadn't anticipated. And the people trying to distort that and play politics on the dead bodies of over 100 people now is just an outrage, and yet that's who our opponents are. Any effort to distort facts to make a political point, they'll do.
Well, I think they remind me. This is really radical, so I'll say it because that's who I am. I'm pretty radical. When I got familiar with Islam in D.C. and became a woman against Islam, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. But I discovered that, you know, I heard a guy who was part of the Muslim Brotherhood say, "We love life more than they love death." And I think the same thing carries over. They love destruction. Our enemies love to destroy, even if they're not killing, although they're talking about it more now. They love to destroy more than they like to build up. They don't build up anything. They destroy everything. And it's really a terrible thing.
And we think in the West that's just irrational, but for them, because an apocalypse is a necessary precondition for the return of the 12th Iman, they do everything they can to trigger an apocalypse. I mean, it's not collateral damage for them. It is the mission.
Exactly, and it is the mission of the left here to destroy. That's how they gain power. They undermine and destroy. You know, the communists, their motto is, you know, it's only the struggle. In other words, life is all about the struggle. It's all about destruction and mayhem and chaos. And so that's what we're dealing with. But I want to talk about something else, because you are so tuned into the Supreme Court and to courts in general. But they had a pretty amazing session in June and made a lot of important decisions. And I just, in general, want to ask you, before we get specific about some of the decisions, you remember, I know you do, Amy Coney Barrett actually stepped up and wrote this scathing rebuke in part of Ketanji Brown Jackson. I think it was on the courts issue, wasn't it, John?
It was on the nationwide injunction and the birthright of citizenship issue. And it was a wonderful line. He says, Justice Jackson, wrings her hands and complains about what she thinks is imperial executive, but she completely ignores the imperial judiciary. And that's what we've got going on. An imperial judiciary with lower unelected federal court judges, district court judges, trial level judges, issuing nationwide injunctions to block the president in fulfilling and pursuing the agenda that we, the American people, overwhelmingly elected him to pursue, with the most specious of claims that it violates the Constitution, when it clearly doesn't. They're just substituting their raw will for the exercise of the president's executive orders that we elected him to do. And that's judicial tyranny. It's not judicial review or even judicial supremacy. It's judicial tyranny. And the Supreme Court has finally stepped up and said, whoa, you're not allowed to do those nationwide injunctions. You don't have jurisdiction to do that. Your authority as a district court judge is limited to the parties before your court. And you don't get to counteract the president's actions nationwide because the parties are not before you. You only get to decide the case or controversy before you.
I want to come back to that because I have some questions. I know you had a lot to do with how that case went, but my question to you is kind of a personal one about the court. What's happened here? Because Amy Coney Barrett has been a huge disappointment. She just has. She's voted with the liberal justices so many times on things that were really crucial, and it's been disheartening. And now suddenly she steps up to the plate. And so do you think there's been a sea change in the court? You think that is a turn of events that will have an effect in the future, or do you think that's an isolated case of Amy Coney Barrett doing something good? That's pretty harsh,
well,
isn't it? Right?
I hope, you know, what's been happening with these lower court judges is such an affront to the rule of law and to the elected leadership of this country actually doing what we elected them to do, that I think the Supreme Court has finally come to the realization that if they don't step in, the entire integrity of the judiciary will be lost. And, you know, John Roberts, you know, fashions himself as a guy protecting the integrity of the court. I mean, he's made some monumental miscalculations about that, like upholding Obamacare, even though it was clearly unconstitutional. He thought that would be necessary to protect the integrity of the court when it did just the opposite. But that seems to be his mission. And what these lower court judges have been doing is pushing the envelope so far that they finally said, we got to weigh in here. Or the neutral court, the neutral application of the rule of law will be at risk. And the one authority that we have as a court, we don't control the power of the purse, that's Congress. We don't control the power of the sword, to use the framers' language. That's the executive, the enforcement power. All we have is the power to persuade by our opinions. And if we're letting these crazy opinions take root and stand without challenge, we will undermine the sole authority we have. And I think that's the sea change that we are watching right now. And my guess is that Chief Justice Roberts told the justices as they left town for their summer break to stay in contact because we've got a big emergency docket coming ahead of us. It's not going to wait till the new term reconvenes in October, and you got to be near your phone or Zoom call so we can deal with all these emergency motions that are going to be coming in because of these you know, quite frankly, abusive trial court judges.
So the debate now has been, now that a case we should say, is Trump versus his CASA. Do we say CASA or C-A-S-A? CASA. Trump versus CASA.
CASA.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was a success because the court did limit the ability of the plaintiffs to seek nationwide injunctions that halt the government from enforcing a policy. So everybody goes, yay, this is great, it's done. But then we are hearing now that somehow it's not really done. And I'll give you an example and then please explain this. This happened, this is today. Today, Planned Parenthood challenged the constitutionality of the Big Beautiful Bill, which cuts funding for the organization. Planned Parenthood chose the District of Massachusetts. The motion for a TRO was 53 pages long. And according to press reports, the district court granted the ex parte TRO within a few hours. There's more to it. I don't know if you've seen this since it just came out, John, but here's the deal. They're doing it again. So that's my point. They're doing it again. Well, and so is this going to continue to happen?
It's going to continue to happen, and the Department of Justice will continue to file emergency motions for stay. The Court of Appeals in Boston, the First Circuit, will deny that motion, and then they'll be on the emergency docket in the U.S. Supreme Court. and the Supreme Court will say, you don't have any constitutional right to taxpayer money, particularly taxpayer money that you're funneling, laundering into your abortion operation. They'll stop it for a little bit. It'll cost a lot of effort by the Department of Justice to put a stop to it. But I think the Supreme Court eventually will. But let's go back to the CASA case, because even that one wasn't settled. The moment that decision came down, I told the reporter that all they're going to do is now seek nationwide class action and then get an injunction that applies only to members of the class. But because it's a nationwide class action, it will have the same effect as a nationwide injunction. That was a hole left in the decision big enough to drive a Mack truck through. And within 2 hours, there was a motion for class action certification filed in the very case up in Maryland. Last I checked, it hasn't been granted yet. There's a hearing on that. But I have no doubt that these hand-selected judges will grant these nationwide class certifications to give us the same thing as the nationwide injunction that was just struck down. Now, to do that, they'll be violating the normal rules about class action certification. You've got to have an irreparable injury to get an injunction. And what's the irreparable injury for somebody that may be denied citizenship for a year or two while the case is pending, if the decision is ultimately that the president's executive order is not valid, then they'll be recognized as citizens. So in the interim, they'll lose some federal benefits that are available only to citizens. But loss of money damages is never irreparable because it can be paid retroactively. So where's the irreparable injury on a class-wide basis? Some people might have an injury. Our parents are parts of MS-13, and they're going to be deported, and they'll deport me with them if I'm not a citizen. So that would be an irreparable injury, but that's going to be very unique to each member of the class. And so there's no commonality, as is required for class action, but they'll grant the class certification anyway. And here I want to focus on Justice Kagan, because when out of the Fifth Circuit down in Texas, nationwide injunctions were being issued against Biden actions or against Obama actions. He was all over criticizing these nationwide injunctions. She said it leads to judge selection. You can bring your case in a favorable forum like Boston or District of Columbia or Seattle or Baltimore and very likely get a judge to agree with you even though the law doesn't support it. And it's called forum selection, and it's bad for the rule of law. And when it was happening against presidents that she liked, she was very critical of it. And now all of a sudden she just thinks it's hunky-dory. But the fact of the matter is they are hand-selecting their judges by going to districts that are overwhelmingly Obama or Biden-appointed judges. And then we shouldn't be surprised that they're getting out of these activist judges and activist ruling. So we've got a bigger problem than just the injunctions. We've got a real threat to the rule of law in this disparate understanding of how the judiciary is working now.
John, I'm just curious. You know, John Roberts is notorious for, I'm not an attorney. I know I don't quite understand the procedure, so forgive my ignorance here. But John Roberts is notorious for allowing half-measure decisions, you know, leaving a loophole, sending it back to other courts. It's like a pattern with him. He never wants to make an absolute decision. Is that part of that universe? Is that what's happened here, that they just didn't do it more thoroughly than they could have?
I think so. Although I will say this, they did step up last week with a ruling on the morning of July 4th or maybe the evening of July 3rd. So one of the cases that was decided toward the end of the term was an emergency motion to stay an injunction dealing with the president's deportation of gang, you know, Tranguera or MS-13 or other really nasty criminal thugs to third countries because their own home countries wouldn't accept them back. And they said, okay, fine, we'll send them to South Sudan or we'll send them someplace else. And a federal judge up in Massachusetts issued a nationwide injunction blocking that. The Supreme Court vacated the injunction. Said, you know, issued a stay. That injunction is not valid. We're going to block it. And then the judge 2 hours later, said, well, they've just blocked my injunction, but they didn't block my subsequent order enforcing my injunction. So that order remains in effect, and you can't deport these guys. It was utter nonsense. And thankfully, within a couple of days, the Supreme Court took that ridiculous decision up and said, no, you don't get to enforce an injunction that we've already held to be invalid. It's basic supremacy clause, and we're the Supreme Court. You're the district judge. You have to comply with our orders. And so they immediately stepped in and stopped that kind of nonsense. But these judges are going to just keep doing it. And I think at some point, look, years and years ago, we had a similar thing out of the Ninth Circuit. A couple of judges out there kept issuing orders blocking an execution, and the Supreme Court kept reversing those orders. And then they would kind of make some other argument on why it had to be blocked. And this went on over and over and over again. And the Supreme Court finally issued an order depriving that lower court of any jurisdiction to hear any more.
Wow,
I think we're getting to the point where the Supreme Court is losing patience with some of these judges not getting the message of their opinions and their orders and their controlling precedent.
Well, that's what I had wondered about that, too, because they have seemed, the court has seemed, not all of them, of course, but their majority opinion is that they don't understand what's happening in the country. I don't think they've understood the wokeness, how vicious things have gotten, because they are kind of separated from us. They, in a way, I know they watch the news, but they don't live among us, and for good reason. I wondered when now Amy Coney Barrett has to sit next to Ketanji Brown Jackson and listen to the nonsense, really unconnected from anything constitutional. She's just really proven to be at least uninformed, uneducated, or just not real smart. I'm not sure which. But now having to sit side by side, are they waking up to the ridiculousness we all have to put up with all the time?
Well, I think her opinion challenging Justice Jackson, I think, is very significant, that they are losing patience with the theatrics and the antics that's coming out of the left wing of the court. Look, this crazy case that I talked about with the judge said, well, you've blocked my injunction, but not my order enforcing my injunction. Even Justice Kagan joined with the majority, say, look, I disagreed with the merits of the case, but once we issued an opinion, that's binding, and you've got to comply with it, lower court judge. So I give credit to Justice Kagan for sticking with the rule of law there. But Justice Sotomayor and Justice Jackson still were in dissent. Well, we should let this judge's antics go unanswered. It was really stunning.
It is stunning.
Look, we've now had a couple of decades of Democrat appointed judges that are appointed because of their commitment to an agenda rather than the rule of law. And lower court judges during the Biden administration and in the Obama administration were picked precisely because of that, not because of their legal acumen or their commitment to the rule of law or their impartiality. They were picked and nominated and then confirmed by a Democrat-controlled Senate precisely because they would further the agenda, whether the law allowed for it or not. And we're seeing the results of that play out. And it's a very dangerous game they're playing, because if you throw off the rule of law, what do you have left? And that's what they're doing. They're willing to throw off the rule of law in order to pursue their agenda. And at the end of the day, the chaos that will be created is not something that will be easy to put back in the bottle.
Okay, so one last question on this, because I'm still unclear. With that case that was decided in the court, Trump versus CASA, which limited the ability of plaintiffs to seek nationwide injunctions through lower courts. How then can these lower courts, like the one in Boston, now file an I don't know, I'm sorry, it might not be the same thing. It seems like it's the same thing. How can they do that? Isn't it just like dead on arrival? And why does the Supreme Court have to listen to all of those when they made this decision that it's not appropriate?
Well, they'll come up with So there'll be two things. One, in the CASA case itself, they'll say, well, we've got a nationwide class, and so we're giving a nationwide injunction that applies only to the members, only to the parties to the case, but it's a nationwide class action, so it's everybody. You even had one judge that say, I'm certifying a class, not just for anybody that lives right now, but anybody in the future that might be born that fits these circumstances will be members of my class as well. I mean, they are just blowing smoke to oppose the president's agenda. And, you know, that's why I said at the beginning, I think Chief Justice Roberts has probably directed all the other justices, stay within contact for the next couple of months, because we're going to have a lot of these things that we're going to have to deal with on a very quick turnaround. But these lower court judges are just going to keep doing it under the theory that they can't take them all. And maybe some of their stuff will stick, but it's dangerous. And worse, if these lower court judges are thumbing their nose at the rule of law, what is an ordinary citizen's what is the message an ordinary citizen takes from that about the need to comply with the law on their end? You know, I mean, this is dangerous. What's going on? And I hope that the Supreme Court continues to move swiftly in response to it on each and every one of these, because that's the only way to put a stop to it, it seems to me.
Yeah, well, it's maybe good. Maybe it's justice for the Supreme Court for not finishing the job when they made their decision. But hey, there's some good news, and I mentioned it to you briefly before we went on the air here, but I'd love your thoughts about this. That federal judge in Wisconsin, who is a Judge Hannah Dugan, who helped an illegal immigrant out the back door and covered for him and helped him escape ICE officials, was arrested. I think she was charged in April. And so then she appealed. But now here's the thing. This is her appeal, John. This is what I guess her attorneys wrote. Because the president, because the statement was made for the president that he may not be prosecuted for exercising his core constitutional powers, and he is entitled, at a minimum, to a presumptive immunity from prosecution for all his official acts, the lawyers for this judge claimed in their motion that the case should be dismissed because the government cannot prosecute Judge Dugan because she is entitled to judicial immunity for her official acts. So now a U.S. magistrate, Judge Nancy Joseph, has recommended on Monday that the motion, Dugan's motion, be dismissed, be denied, and torpedoed and dismissed. So I think that's good news. I just want to know if you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, it's very good news. And look, Judge Dugan seems to misunderstand her role as a judge. This was not somebody that was in her courtroom undergoing a trial for some criminal offense, and that she was protecting the jurisdiction of her court over that case. He was outside, and she helped squirrel him out the back door in order to avoid ICE detention and capture. That's no part of her judicial duties. And her lawyers need to read a little bit more about the presidential immunity decision. He's immune when he's performing his official duties. He's not immune when he's performing purely private conduct. And her actions here were purely private conduct, and she has no more immunity from enforcement of the law against obstruction of official proceedings, the law against obstruction of law enforcement, than anybody else. And so what she's trying to do is claim that she's above the law. I thought we spent the last number of years saying nobody is above the law. Well, she's claiming that it has nothing to do with her official judicial duties, squirreling this guy away, shielding him from ICE arrest. That's not part of her official duties. And I think her lawyers, quite frankly, ought to be sanctioned for making such an argument.
Well, we'll see what happens on that end, but at least for today, that's good news. Okay, so John, you are continuing to battle. You're in so many courts trying to fight for your life as an attorney, I think, although you'll have value even if you lose your law licenses, because I know how much how much wisdom and insight you're giving to different entities in very important matters. But it is important to you. You need to take care of your family and try to, you've incurred so much debt with these charges against you. It's been very difficult. So I want to bring people up to date. Are there just, she says, two states that have brought, you've been charged with election interference or something to that? Is it Arizona and Georgia? Is there any other state?
Yeah, those are the only two criminal matters. I was unindicted co-conspirator in Jack Smith's criminal indictment against President Trump in Washington, D.C. That happily went away when President Trump was elected, and they dismissed the case. But Bonnie Willis down in Georgia, in Fulton County, Georgia, that's Atlanta, she brought a racketeering conspiracy charge and 43 other counts, nine of them naming me, against the electors and several of Trump's lawyers and what have you. Now, she's been disqualified because of her blatant conflict of interest, hiring her lover to paying him $750,000 to pursue this prosecution. And then she was getting kickbacks in the form of luxury vacations to Aruba and Napa and a cruise and all sorts of things. And so she was disqualified. And she's appealed that disqualification order to the Georgia Supreme Court. That's her right. But even while she's been disqualified, she continues to appeal other decisions against her in a case that she's no longer legally authorized to be pursuing. And I'll give you the big example. I was invited by the Georgia legislature subcommittee on the election to testify about the constitutional authority of the state legislatures in the Electoral College process. I accepted that invitation and I testified. I answered their questions during the testimony. And Bonnie Willis charged me with soliciting the legislators to violate their oath of office because I agreed to testify at their request. Oh. That charge was thrown out, but after she was disqualified, she has appealed the decision to dismiss that charge. On what legal basis, I have no idea. But this is the kind of lawlessness that we're seeing. And it's been sitting now before the Georgia Supreme Court for almost 6 months, waiting to see whether they're going to take up her appeals or not. But in the meantime, I've still got to have lawyers on call. I got to deal with all these things down in Georgia. In Arizona, the attorney general there campaigned on going after the electors, retaliating against them for challenging the election and deterring anybody in the future from ever doing that again. Well, there's a statute in Arizona that says you can't retaliate or deter against people's exercise of First Amendment rights. This was the right of speech and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. So we won back in February a major ruling. The judge says, yeah, you've demonstrated the initial contention that this was in retaliation for your First Amendment rights. She now has to prove that it wasn't. And she doesn't want to do that because that means it'll expose all of her internal communications to discovery for us to show what her real motivation was. So she's appealed that, and we're waiting to see what the courts are going to do with that on appeal. Another ruling went against her. That the judge ruled that her presentation to the grand jury was so biased it excluded key provisions of the law that demonstrated what we did was legal and lawful. And so he threw out the indictment and remanded it to a new grand jury. The case is still pending and active, but we get a new grand jury, so she's appealed that ruling as well. And again, we got to now respond to her appeals. We got to go to new hearings. We got to get all the lawyers involved. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing with this nonsense. And then you get California and the California bar effort, where I went through the longest and most expensive bar disciplinary proceeding in history. 10 weeks long, cost over $1 million and counting. And then middle of last month, we get a ruling from the appellate panel doubling down on the recommendation that I should be disbarred because, you know, I said there was illegality in the election and other people said the election was perfect and therefore I was lying and should be disbarred because I wouldn't bend my knee to blatantly false claims from the government. And this is the dynamic. It's Orwellian what we're dealing with. You gotta come to believe that 2 + 2 = 5 and repeat the lie or we'll destroy you. And I'm not willing to let that happen because I don't like the country that would result from that if we bend the knee to government tyranny. And so I'm fighting very hard to make sure my kids and my grandkids don't have to do so.
John, in the case of Fannie Willis, how in the world, if she is appealing all of these things, is this done through her government connection, even though she's been removed from this case? Does this cost her anything? And if it does, who in the world's behind this besides her? You think she's doing this on her own?
No. She's doing it with the taxpayer funds out of the Fulton County DA's office, even though she's been disqualified. The motions to challenge, to appeal the decision dismissing the other counts, some of the other accounts against me, she appealed that. It's got her name as the district attorney. It's from the Fulton County DA's office. They're using taxpayer funds to pursue this agenda-driven vendetta against anybody related to Trump and his electors and his efforts to challenge the obvious illegality that occurred in the 2020 election.
So who's not doing their job in Georgia that she's still able to do this? Surely there's some venue where she can be brought to account for what she's doing, or someone that can rein her in. Who's not doing that?
Well, we raised the issue about her lack of authority to bring this appeal in our opposition brief to her appeal, and that was filed back in April or early May, so several months ago, and we still don't have any word out of the Georgia Supreme Court on it. Unfortunately, it's like what we were talking about with the U.S. Supreme Court finally stepping up because, things were hemorrhaging. You can't allow this stuff to go unanswered for that long. It festers. And hopefully the Georgia Supreme Court will take some decisive action pretty quickly. But in the meantime, it's just now maybe she's going to say, well, the disqualification order is automatically stayed when I filed the appeal. I don't think that's correct under the Georgia statutes, but maybe there'll be some argument like that. But even still, you look at the broader picture, the 64,000 foot level picture. The American people reacted overwhelmingly to this kind of lawfare in the November 2024 election. And these local prosecutors should have gotten the message. But in fact, they've doubled down on it. It's almost as if they are saying to themselves, we had Trump's scalp in our grasp. But for the stupidity of the American people reelecting him, we could have gotten his scalp and put him away for the rest of his life. But to prove that we could have gotten his scalp, we're going to get after these other scalps as well, just to prove that we could have done it. I mean, it's utter nonsense. It's lawfare on steroids. And what they're trying to do is cower people into submission. So, do I want to stand up for the next election illegality or stand up to some school board policy that's putting men in my daughter's locker rooms or competing with them in the swim meets? Do I want to stand up to that knowing that what I likely suffer is what Eastman and Jeff Clark and others have been having to deal with for the last 5 years? Do I want to do that? And a lot of people are going to say it's not worth it, and then we lose. We lose something very precious. Which is the ability to stand up to government tyranny when it's acting without constitutional authority.
You know, that reminds me, John, Tina Peters, I try to keep in touch with her. So people listening, who's Tina Peters? She was a Colorado election clerk. She is a Gold Star mom. She's about 70 years old almost. Beautiful woman, strong Christian. And what she did was save data from the 2020 election. She saved it on a thumb drive of some sort because she knew that the Colorado authorities were trying to do unethical things, hide numbers and not tell the truth, change vote totals, whatever you want to call it. And so Colorado, that county, came after her with an absolute vengeance, and there was no justice to be had, no matter where she turned or what she did. And they have put her in prison, and she is now in prison. She's just been threatened by a roommate that they're going to kill her. They moved her to a different prison, and now she's 3 hours away from anybody that might come and see her. And it's so horrible, John, and I tell that story just to point out that it's not just John Eastman, who to some of you, and to me too, is a celebrity. He's got, he's got all these degrees. He's achieved all the heights of success. But it's Tina Peters, who has nothing, But she tried to do what was right in the election, which illustrates what John's talking about. This will be our future for all of us. We won't have the courage to stand up. I hope that some of us do, but most people won't. And things are going to get out of control, and that's why we have to do what's right. John, I just saw this morning in my inbox that Tulsi Gabbard, who heads the DNI, the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, that they're going to be doing a deep dive now on the 2022 elections as well. Do you think that would have any effect if we have to wait long enough for them to come discover and do a report? And let's say they did that, and let's say they discovered all the things that you described so beautifully when I asked you to do that, that would affect your case. Would it fall apart?
Well, it should fall apart because everything we said is, you know, we on the information we had at the time was true, and the subsequent information that has been uncovered it demonstrated it was true. You know, just one example. To this day, there are more ballots that were cast and counted in Pennsylvania than there were voters. And the Secretary of State continues to lie about that on the website of the Pennsylvania Secretary of State. So these things were proved. Tina Peters, she said, you're going to do an upgrade to the software that's going to destroy election data in violation of federal law, where that election data has to be retained for 22 months. So she made a mirror image copy of the data in order to comply with federal law. Her tech people refused to help her do that, so she hired an outside forensic analyst to do it. And for that, she's been accused of fraud, of impersonating. She was the elected official of impersonating of the people who work for her. I mean, this is as much nonsense as the judge that ordered Secretary of Bessent that couldn't have access to the Department of Treasury data. Only his employees had a right to access it. I mean, this is utter nonsense. But the judge in Tina Peters' case didn't let any of that come in as evidence. The report that the forensic analysis analyst did demonstrated that packets of votes were removed and then re-uploaded with different packets that altered the vote tallies. I mean, they proved that, and none of that was allowed to be introduced into evidence in Tina Peters' trial either. And so the Department of Justice, she asked for filed in federal court of a habeas corpus petition, not challenging the conviction. That's going up on direct appeal in the state courts, and hopefully the conviction will be reversed. But she just said, we have such a strong likelihood of that being reversed that you really should give me bond pending appeal so that I'm not in prison for something that is really not a crime and will get reversed. And the U.S. Department of Justice weighed in with a statement of interest agreeing that she should be released on bond pending her appeals. And then it added, and oh, by the way, we want to notify the court that the prosecutors are under criminal investigation for a conspiracy to deprive her and others of their civil rights. So this was a huge development, but so far it's been months now, and we still don't have any ruling on whether she can get out of prison pending her appeal. We're waiting on that. Now, I happen to know one of her attorneys. He met with her last week. My wife and I sent her a letter, and I would encourage people to do that. She's got a website. She's got a legal defense fund. People should go to that. I think it's Give, Send, Go. Just look for Tina Peters, and you can send messages, and her lawyer can print those messages out and take them to her and read them to her. I think it helps with her mental state in the prison to know there are a lot of people praying for her.
Oh, John, I'm so glad you said that. You see, I never thought about you being that involved with her case. I don't know why. I should have known. But I'm so glad to hear you say that and to encourage people to write to her, because that's what I would say, too. Give, Send, Go. Look for Tina Peters on Give, Send, Go and write her. You can write her in that way. And the thing of it is, she's a courageous woman. She's not a weak woman who's withering away. I mean, she's been very strong in her faith, sharing and leading as best she can among, you know, these women who've committed crimes with great compassion. She's just done amazing things while she's been in prison, but she's just so alone. and so desperate and not seeing any movement is really getting to her. So I thank you for mentioning that, John. Tina Peters at Give, Send, Go. And that reminds me now, John Eastman, you have all of these bills. You're in, I don't know, over $1 million at least in debt. You've lost. You had to sell your house. I know some things that I maybe shouldn't say, but you.
Well, I will correct you on that. We didn't have to sell our house, so we're still here. But we did face a year of protests at the end of our street every day for a year by a bunch of lefty nuts in our hometown. And we've got grandchildren elsewhere in the country, so we travel a bit and spend as much time as we can with them. But we luckily still have our house. But look, the California bar matter took over $1 million. My fight against the J6 committee was over $300,000. We've spent total nearly $1.7 million just trying to defend against now 18 different actions that we've been involved with in defending against this stuff. It's just utter nonsense. And part of their mission is to destroy me and bankrupt me, destroy my reputation. So that, for example, I'm very heavily involved in the birthright citizenship issue. I've been researching and writing about that issue for 25 years. And now, you know, when we weigh in and that issue is coming to a head finally, New York Times does a big feature story without ever confronting the argument about birthright citizenship. They just say, well, Eastman, he's the guy that tried to overturn the election for Trump, so you don't have to listen to anything he says. They use it as a way to discredit an argument without ever having to confront the argument. And that's, you know, that it's Saul Alinskyite stuff. They're playing right out of his playbook.
Target, make it personal and destroy. Target, make it personal and destroy them.
Yep. And then scare everybody else from daring to stand up like I did, because the same thing will happen to you. And that's what their mission is. And the only way to defeat it is to stand up against it and get people to coalesce around those who are standing up against it. Because this is such a serious threat to our way of life and to our constitutional system of government here, that if we don't stand up to it, we'll lose something that we inherited that is precious beyond measure.
John, one of my favorite clips of you, which I wish I had to play, but it's basically this. You are under siege. I don't know if you're in Arizona or somewhere, and all these things are coming at you, and you're being raked over the coals and already having so many things that you have to defend, including your law license. And a reporter asks you, do you still believe the 2020 election was stolen? And you say, yes, I do. I love that.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And that was, and I'll tell you the story behind that. That was outside the prison in Atlanta, Georgia, in Fulton County, after I had turned myself in and gotten booked and got the mugshot made. You know, Trump was much better marketing. He had mugs for sale within 20 minutes of his mugshot. I didn't do that.
It's not
but
too
I
late.
I did go out and hold a press conference. But I have to tell you the background story. My lawyer recommended that I go in at 3 in the morning in casual clothes when there's no media around. I said, that's crap. I'm going in a suit and tie. I'm an attorney. This is an outrage, and I'm going to hold a press conference afterwards. And that's what we did. And the very last question was, do you still think the election was stolen? I said, absolutely, because I think it was. And
I
think
too.
The evidence that's coming in now, and that Cash Patel over at FBI and Ed Martin, head of the weaponization task force now at the Department of Justice, they said, look, you know, we cannot leave this stuff unaddressed, because if people actually stole an election, we need to know that. We need to hold the people that did that accountable so that it'll never happen again. And that's, I think, what we're now seeing with these new task force. And there is so much evidence out there that I think they're going to, if anything, there'll be too much. They'll have to try and pick and choose what they think they can accomplish with criminal indictments. But it needs to be done.
You know, John, I think it's going to be just like the Russiagate thing, because of the movement that we're seeing on investigations and all the information that's coming out in the mainstream, in the lifeblood of the American people. They're going to understand. Their eyes are going to open like they did over COVID, like they did over Russiagate, and they're going to see that all this garbage against you and about that election, that we were lied to again, and it has to stop. Okay, so I want people to know how they can help you. There's a couple of entities, so I want you to tell me what's the best place to send them so they can send you some help to help pay these enormous bills?
Yeah, so the best place is givesendgo.com/Eastman. We don't pay any vendor fees on that. It's only the credit card 2.9% fee. At the top of that page is an address if people want to send checks rather than using electronic payment. They can do that there, and it's our P.O. box, and so they can send a check to there as well. More importantly, also, Give, Send, Go is a Christian site. People can send prayers, and my wife and I read them. They're heartwarming, and we also use that site as a blog with updates. I would encourage people to go back and look at Update 43, a wonderful article that my children wrote defending their dad back when the first bar decision came down. It'll bring tears to your eyes to see them so supportive. But look at those updates as well, partly to see what I'm dealing with, but partly to understand the dynamic and have the ammunition to respond to your friends and colleagues who say, oh, they deserve to be prosecuted because they tried to undermine our democracy and overthrow an election. They'll see the actual truth, and they'll be armed with arguments that they can respond to such nonsense with.
That's great. That's just great, John. Now, let me repeat. It's givesendgo.com/Eastman. givesendgo.com/Eastman. If you want to give by credit card, there is a little charge for the credit card, but you can do checks, and John has just described, go to the top of the page, and there's a P.O. box number there. And your kids, you remember, well, you don't have to remember, you do a lot of interviews, but we read that letter from your kids on the air, and we've talked to you about birthright citizenship. I would encourage anybody that's interested to go back in our files, Sandy Rios 24/7. You can find those shows. But that was a beautiful letter. It was very moving. And John, someday I have to meet your wife and I have to meet your kids. So that's you got to promise me that we'll make that happen.
I will. Yes, I promise. We just got to figure out a place to do it. They're spread around the country now, but we will get that figured out because they'd be delighted to meet you and all the support you've provided to us.
Yeah. And thank you, John. All right, so I guess we're done. And I just appreciate your time always. And we'll talk again soon. I'm just sure we will. So thank you, John Eastman.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Take care, Sandy.
You too. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Breaking news. And we begin at noon with the breaking news. A Fulton County Superior Court judge has ordered District Attorney Fawnie Willis of Fulton County to pay more than $54,000 in fees to another attorney. Good afternoon. I'm Rick Fulbaum.
And I'm Anna Harris. That attorney is the one who effectively brought down the election interference case that she had against now President Donald Trump. That attorney, Ashley Merchant, is the one who brought attention to Willis's romantic and business relationship with Nathan Wade. Willis hired Wade to investigate her historic case against President Trump and more than a dozen co-defendants.
Now, Merchant represents one of those co-defendants, Michael Roman. There he is. She's been trying to force Willis into disclosing the amount of money her office has spent on its Trump prosecution. Willis has argued that her office is not subject to Georgia open record laws.
Well, so, you know, it's like a soap opera, isn't it? It really is. If you were a writer in Hollywood, I would just pick up on these stories and change the names to protect the not-so-innocent. The Fawnie Willis drama, the one in Arizona with the the Secretary of State and the governor at the time of 2020. I think there's been a bit of a change, but they're still really bad characters. We've got the John McCain family, who's really still has tremendous influence in Republican politics in Arizona, so it's really a mess. There are great conservatives out there, but they're fighting these entrenched people that hate conservatives, but they're Republicans. So that's kind of that fight. You saw what happened to Carrie Lake out there, and hopefully she'll be vindicated as well in her bid to become the governor. She should have been the governor. I'm confident that we're going to find out that that's exactly the way that election should have come about. And so Georgia, the same thing. And so many people are entangled in this. It's not just John Eastman. It's lots of people whose names you don't know who were acting as electors, lawfully appointed as electors for President Trump in case they needed those when the Electoral College vote was taken. Perfectly legal, but they made it out to be some kind of a scandal. But it was not a scandal. But these people in Michigan, I think it is, and maybe Georgia, have been charged with crimes for being these electors for President Trump. And it goes on and on and on. And yes, it's just like a soap opera. Or it's like a book that someone would read that you couldn't put it down because you couldn't imagine that this could ever happen in real life. But it has happened. And our country has suffered under the worst kind of governance. And we have to keep fighting until it's over. And so that's what we're going to do. I want to remind you that for John, it's givesendgo.com/Eastman. Givesendgo.com/Eastman. And also, again, you can send a check. If you get the P.O. box, it's up in the left-hand corner up the top. And I encourage you to send whatever you can send. Just anything would encourage him and his wife and family. And he's right. His kids have stood by him. They love their dad so much, and his wife, too. When I said that he had lost his house, I think the confusion was he did have to move from his home because of the death threats and all the things that were happening, and he had to move to a different state. So I guess I misstated about him losing his home. But I just wanted you to understand what's really true. So Tina Peters, just a woman after my own heart, she's been our guest here. And I just ask that you'd pray for her. I just ask that you'd pray for her. And if you'd like to help Tina, go to GiveSendGo and look for Tina Peters. GiveSendGo and look for Tina Peters. She also has that website where you could find out more about her. So she's just an absolute dear. Just love her. I don't know her well, but we've talked and prayed together enough that I feel like I know her. And so she's a sister in Christ to me. So, and she is to those of you who are believers listening to me out there. So we need to help her in any way we can, because it could be us, right? So I think we're done. And before I say goodbye, I want to thank Timothy Plan for making these discussions possible, and also for showing you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.